Welcome, everybody. I'd like to open the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce Development. It's Duck Day here in our committee. We are going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 559 and SJR 20 simultaneously. Administrator Lindholm, would you give us a brief summary?
Certainly. Senate Bill 559 establishes the University of Oregon, U of O, as an independent public university governed by University of Oregon Board of Directors, empowers State Board of Higher Education to adopt performance benchmarks to be achieved by U of O, removes the University of Oregon from its status as a state agency and from the Oregon University system, and makes it an autonomous public university with new governance and financial models, allows the university to issue revenue bonds and enter into credit enhancement agreements and financing agreements, declares an emergency effective July 1, 2011. Senate Joint Resolution 20 proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution to allow the state to loan credit and incur specified amounts of indebtedness to provide monies to partially fund endowments at public universities, refers the proposed amendment to the citizens of Oregon for their approval or rejection at the next regular general election.
Thank you. We'll start. We have Senators Beyer, Nelson, and Edwards lead off testimony.
Scary, is it?
Shall we, Mr. Chair?
You shall.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Chris Edwards. I'm a state senator representing the north half of Eugene and West Eugene and Junction City. And I wanted to, before we really get into the depth of my presentation, or the meat of my presentation and my testimony today, thank you for hearing this bill. As you know, this bill has generated a lot of discussion in the Capitol this session, as big ideas often do. So I want to thank you for giving this bill its day in committee and a fair hearing. I decided to make this my number one legislative priority this session because as I looked at the landscape of bills out there, and as I looked at the opportunity that we have this session to make substantive change, I believe that this one rises to the top in terms of its ability to make really substantial change for the greatest number of students in our state. I come to you not only as a state senator, but also as an Oregon State graduate. And I want to put that on the public record so that you all understand that for me, this is not a ducks versus a beavers thing, okay? I went to Oregon State. I met my wife at Oregon State. This Civil War, I was proud to wish for nothing more than Oregon State to dash the University of Oregon's hope at competing for a national championship. Okay, that's where I am. That's where I am when it comes to sports. I have at home one of my prized possessions. This is an old basketball that I have signed from when I was a kid.
That Civil War thing didn't work out really well for you.
It didn't work out too well. Maybe next year. One of my prized possessions at home is an old basketball that I have signed by A.C. Green and Daryl Flowers and other members of the Beaver team during the Ralph Miller days. And so, being the son of Oregon State attendees, my whole family's, everybody that's gone to college, the most of them have gone to Oregon State. So that's really where I'm coming from. But when we come into this building, when we come to the state capitol, we're not only representing our constituents, but I believe that we're representing the best interests of the state. We are the stewards of the public interest. And that's why I'm proud to bring forward this bill that establishes in law the University of Oregon as a public university with a public mission and a public governance board. The status quo, as you know, is not acceptable. We do not have a good record as a state, whether you go back to the 90s or you go all the way back to the 70s, of controlling the rate of tuition increase. And as you know, we're looking forward at a potential decade of deficits. A decade of deficits between the public needs and the resources to fill those public needs. So I think that a proposal like this really moves the dial in a big way. And I want to thank the chair and other members of this committee for the good work that you've done on establishing other changes, the coordinating council bill. And I think that this is very much fits within that framework. And I want to thank you for the good work that you've put into to reforms thus far, and I know we'll continue to. And so with that, I will pass it on to my colleagues and those more articulate than myself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Senator Lee Beyer. I represent Central Lane and Linn counties. And I'm here today to support both of these bills. And my support is based on the fact that this is probably one of the most important issues in Oregon's future and support for higher education. Unfortunately, it has fallen by the wayside over the last few decades, to say the least. The current supporters, you're well aware, for the good work that I know both the chair and vice chair did in the task force in the interim, is we've fallen way behind. As you're well aware, we're the University of Oregon, and the system installs is the support that this legislature provides to the university system is well under 10%. It's 7% of all funding that goes to the University of Oregon, which is it's almost criminal where we're at now. But we all know why we're there. It's there because we don't have any money. And so we need to look at ways that we can change that around and bring it back. A lot of discussion in the prior work that this committee has done in terms of how do we make it more affordable for students to go to school, how do we get the retention rates up and the graduation rates up, and I firmly believe that at the heart of that issue is the cost of education. This particular proposal is the only one that's on the table that puts any new money into the system, or I should say has the potential to put new money into the system. And while this is a proposal that was crafted by the University of Oregon, as you well know, the referral would authorize it for all public universities in the state system. And I truly believe that at least the three major universities could equally benefit from this and could make the same kind of progress if the model was set. Certainly we did that in the 90s with Oregon Health Sciences University. This is a solid proposal. It's one that has been lauded by as faraway institutions, incredible institutions as the Wall Street Journal. It's consistent with the kinds of work that other universities have done in terms of having private, if you will, or I should really say independent, that's a boards of directors. I would note that I know there's been a lot of discussion over that, but if you look at it, with a board that would be created and appointed by the governor and confirmed by this body, I don't think it's any different than the current State Board of Higher Education. So the model's there, it's that. But we really need to work on getting it together because our economy of the future depends on it. We've talked a lot around these chambers about the economy of the future, the economy of knowledge. Well, if we don't reinvest in that education development, we're going to fall behind. And we can't afford to do that. Our economic future is dependent on that. And I think this is one of the options that moves us forward. As I say, it brings new money into the system. One of the testaments to that is the fact that this proposal has very widespread business support. Everything from the corporate leaders of our state to the small chambers of commerce in places like Springfield and Medford and other places that are supporting this notion. Strongly supported, good idea. I hope that you'll give it due consideration. And I will say that I think, as Senator Edwards pointed out, it really does fit in with the work that this committee has done in terms of the Educational Coordinating Committee idea. It fits in with the Oregon University System model, and it certainly is at the heart of the notion that the governor is trying to promote with his new Education Investment Board. Investment's a key word there. You got to invest. This is a way to invest. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Nelson, State Senator from Pendleton. I represent District 29, the four northeast counties in northeast Oregon. I'm going to bring a little bit different perspective to this issue. It's governance and funding, and both of them. One bill talks about governance, the other one talks about funding. I don't think it's possible to really separate them. I have great faith in the governance part of where this committee is going. The people that are involved with the higher education are pretty bright people, and they're going to take care of the situation. My really concern is the funding part of it. And so I'm going to bring the perspective of a bill that then Senator Decker and I passed in 2001. It was the OHSU model, where the state came up with $200 million $200 million in bonding if OHSU would raise $300 million. Well, they did it. And in fact, they raised about $375 million. So when you drive up I-5 going into Portland and you see the sky lift going up to the Pill Hill from down on John's Landing, that is all a result of what the state did in combining a public-private partnership. They built the big building up on top of the hill, and then they built the bottom, the building down the bottom, then connected with the sky lift, or what do you call that, a chairlift? Tram lift. I'm a skier, chairlift. It's a chairlift. I get a little confused about that. But that's was a successful model. Now, whether it could be molded to fit the university system, I think there's some possibilities, and I think that's what this committee ought to be looking at, is how do you put that stuff all together. I can remember back in the late 90s and early part of 2001 or so, I think the budget that we were giving out to OHSU was like over $100 million. Now we're down to about $60 million. And when we're putting $100 million, it was probably 40% of their budget or whatever the figure is. Now we're only funding them at about 2% of the budget. And I sat on the committee that the chair has the task force during the interim, and we were talking with some of the folks from the University of Oregon on their foundation. And they actually have a plan that in 30 years, the state of Oregon will not have to provide any money for education, for higher education, by the use of an endowment. But that's going to take an investment on our part, and you can check on those figures and see if they fit with you. But to me, and I think these fellows have talked about it, is that we can't afford to stay where we are, because the cost of education, higher education, is just going to become astronomical, and we're not going to be able to afford it. So I know that my president at Eastern University in LeGrand, he's a little concerned about the governance proposal. But, I think that's what this process is about, is let's put these ideas out here and see where we go with them. What can we do? What can we make work? And then this funding model, what we have going on now in this country is we've got a lot of really very wealthy people who are saying, we have to give back. Warren Buffett, Bill Gates have started it, and I'm understanding through some of my other secretive sources that there was a meeting in the Bahamas this week with some people who were flying in jets. But the purpose of the meeting was to say, okay, you guys have super wealth. How are you going to give back to society? And I think this is an opportunity for us as a state to come and say, okay, how can we tap into that? Because we do have some of those wealthy people that would be willing to put up money for higher education. And to me, that's the real key. How do we make this system more affordable for young people? So my hat's off to you for hearing this bill and doing things, and my trust is in you also.
Thank you all. Questions or comments? Senator George?
Chairman, I guess the funding source is sort of the issue here. So there's two parts. One is that, as I read the bill, it's $800 million of general obligation bonds. That seems like a big bite of our bonding ability as a state. And then the flip side of that is that the proposal is based off the 9% return, and it looks like to me that if the financial side doesn't work, we're still on the hook for what U of O does. I'm not saying it's a deal killer, but I'm just saying that it seems like you're kind of, it's wrought with a little bit of risk. One is we're taking a lot of our bonding authority and a general obligation buying authority and attaching to this program, which if OSU or Portland State wanted to go through the same thing, it might limit our ability to do so. And then the flip side is, what happens if the funding mechanism doesn't work going forward, they don't hit their targets, then they come back to us and ask us for additional resources. And so if you guys could address those issues, I'd appreciate it.
Well, you're going to be sorry you asked me that question. I'm going to bring water into this. We probably can't, I mean, it's going to be very difficult with our bonding capacity, as I'm understanding, to come up with $800 million. But that would be sometime down in the future, as I understand. Maybe in two biennials or another biennium, we might be able to do some of that. But when I look around the states in the Northwest that have surpluses, that actually have money, it's those folks that are using natural resources. And I'm working with a group of students at Portland State University to study the effects of taking Columbia River water below Bonneville Dam and selling it to southern states. And I know there's a lot of federal issues and stuff like that in it, but their preliminary estimates to me are that at the current price of water, and the demand for water in California, it's a demand of almost 4 million acre-feet of water. The current price that they're charging, if Oregon could supply them with some of that water, they would raise about $800 million a year on an annual basis. It wouldn't all be net, obviously. But, you know, what I think what we have to do as a state, we're going to have to start looking at other ways to raise some of this money to entice some of these public guys that are private fellows that probably have some resources and maybe want to do something good for the state of Oregon to contribute to it. And I think there'd probably be a lot of alumni if we could somehow or another come up with some amount of money showing some commitment on the part of the state that those folks would step up. So,
Mr. Chair, Senator George, good question. I think the one you think about it in the reverse and say, what's it going to be like for future legislators if we don't do this? Do you see us even reducing the commitment even more? The proposal that's on the table, and the U of O, you know, President Laurier is going to be able to answer this a lot in more detail than the three of us could, but the proposal on the table actually says if the citizens and the legislature allow bonds to be sold, that the revenue stream that would support that over the next, I think it's 20 or 30, whatever the number is the same number and a nominal basis about what we were paying or were allocating or appropriating in 1991. And you think about that and says, do you think in terms of what inflation will do and what that number will likely be? If we don't do that, we'll be putting even more in. The return, and the other one is you don't put, as Senator Nelson has said, we wouldn't be putting a commitment towards that until the private funds are worth. So you still have the corpus of the endowment that you could use to pay that off in bad years. But the reality, the success of the foundation, and they'll testify to that, has been that 9% is a pretty conservative number over time. They'll probably do very well. But there is a risk. There's a risk that would cause a future demand on the system. There's also the risk that if we do nothing, we'll either bear the negative consequences of doing nothing, because we all know that the states that are not investing in higher education are doing worse all the time, and the states that are investing more in higher education are doing better, so we have that risk as well out there. So there's no free lunch out there.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
University of Oregon President Richard LaRiviere.
Mr. President, I don't know if you have you're going to be accompanied by a team or you need to be.
Well, now that I know where Senator Edwards' loyalties lie,
I was going to say, did you happen to hear that?
Chairman Haas and members of the committee, I'm Richard LaRiviere, the president of the University of Oregon, and it's my pleasure to be here with you today for the introduction of the new partnership bills, Senate Bill 559 and Senate Joint Resolution 20. I've had the opportunity to visit with each of you about the bills, although my conversation with Senator Shields was pretty brief. But I appreciate being here, and I appreciate the opening remarks of Senators Edwards, Beyer, and Nelson, as well as the support of many other members of the Senate and the House of Representatives. Their passion and commitment to these reforms is second to none, including my own. It's your leadership that will help us make the big changes that we need to ensure higher education in Oregon is of the highest caliber and affordable for Oregon students and families. I'm here to talk about two important things as it relates to the University of Oregon, governance and access, and a new partnership that we believe will help us to achieve both. Before I go too far into the bills, I want to make several points. First, these bills should not be the ceiling on our efforts in Oregon, but the floor by which we begin to drive meaningful reform throughout the entire public university system. Autonomy is a first step, but it is not, nor should it be, the limit of our ambitions. Second, these bills are not the only answer to our challenges related to higher education. They are not in competition with other bills introduced this session, and in fact complement the other reforms under development and debate in this session. I commend Senator Haas and his committee for your deliberate, careful, and thoughtful attention to the challenges facing higher education in Oregon. I believe your work on Senate Bill 242 is an excellent first step. A fair question that I'm frequently asked is how the ideas proposed in the new partnership help the other public universities. First, none of these bills come at the expense of the other public universities. And secondly, a stronger University of Oregon means a stronger university system and a stronger Oregon. That's why we stand ready to help make this a reality, from the new partnership to the OUS proposal and to the governor's proposals. A stronger higher education system benefits us all as individual institutions, but more importantly, collectively as a state. We will achieve three things under the new partnership. One, we free our universities from a centralized state bureaucracy and provide greater autonomy for our management and operations. Two, we strengthen public accountability and involvement by establishing a dedicated governing board, publicly appointed, for the University of Oregon and any other universities that want them. And three, we prevent further budget cuts and the tuition increases that they create by establishing a public-private endowment authority for any university wishing to pursue it. With these bills, we can guarantee the preservation of our public mission to provide Oregon students with the highest quality public post-secondary education. Without them, we will continue on the path of disinvestment and will make a college education even further out of reach for more Oregon families. Big changes are needed if we want our universities to contribute to the growth and support of Oregon's knowledge-based economy. Under the status quo, we will not only fall short for our students, but we will fall short for Oregon's long-term economic potential. The university is too large and too important to this state to continue operating without a dedicated governing board. Such a board would deliver greater accountability and transparency, as well as increased public involvement in the decisions made at the University of Oregon. Today, the University of Oregon and other universities operate under a centralized management system in state government and without a dedicated board of directors to provide leadership and oversight. No $800 million enterprise with nearly 30,000 students and employees, public or private, should operate this way. Furthermore, obtaining a post-secondary education is essential if we want our students and our state to be able to compete and succeed in a global economy. The 40-40-20 proposal will require an increase of capacity in the state and higher education of 25%. You know probably better than I do that families in Oregon aren't worried about which board or which bureaucrats universities report to. but they expect us to operate efficiently, and they want access. What families do care about is whether they will be able to afford to help their kids access a post-secondary education. They worry about whether their savings will be enough. They wonder whether they will be able to make ends meet so that their sons and daughters have more opportunities than they did. They worry about what we are going to do as stewards of their tax dollars to ensure that higher education isn't just for those with means, but that it's an open door of opportunity for all students who have the drive and the capacity to attain a higher degree. And if that's in question, as it is, they expect us to fix it. Today, I'm here to talk to you about how we fix both. With your leadership, we can. SJR 20 and SB 559 are both key pieces to making sure University of Oregon education remains affordable for low-income and for middle-class Oregonians. This is how we will make this guarantee. At the request of the chief sponsor of Senate Bill 559, Senator Chris Edwards, and in consultation with Governor Kitzhaber, we support an amendment that will ensure that the legislature and the governor have a continuing role in tuition for resident Oregonians, providing some degree of accountability for the new UO Public Board for the decisions they'll be asked to make regarding tuition. The amendment, which is in legislative council now, basically states that the new University of Oregon Board will have the flexibility to increase tuition up to 5% per year for resident undergraduates if needed. However, if the UO Board wants or needs tuition to increase above 5%, the Board must seek and secure the approval of the legislature and the governor. This amendment to SB 559 ensures that elected officials remain involved in the decision-making process regarding tuition at the University of Oregon for resident Oregonians and requires the new board to justify why tuition above this threshold is necessary. The amendment offers a safeguard, a reassurance on the new flexibility and efficiency offered by the creation of the new local governing board at the UO. The second piece of our commitment to access and affordability deals with SJR 20. If we adopt the new public-private funding model offered by SJR 20, the University of Oregon will move to put in place a tuition guarantee program similar to what we did at the University of Kansas when I was there. This is how it will work. Once the new funding model is in place, the new UO board will no longer need to increase tuition to offset reductions in state funding. Tuition increases will only be needed to cover inflationary costs and, more importantly, to enhance the educational experience of our students. The problem with the current model is that most of the tuition increases over the last 20 years have been necessary to sustain quality, not to enhance it. Once the new public-private model is in place, we will establish a tuition guarantee program that states what it will cost for a resident Oregonian to attend the university for 4 years. We will establish a tuition promise. Your costs will only increase by a set percentage each year, and your total cost for 4 years will be fixed. Why is this important? Because the middle class in Oregon is being squeezed out of educational opportunity. We offer substantial financial aid for University of Oregon Pell-eligible students, our lowest-income students, through our Pathway Oregon program. This program enables any Pell-eligible student to attend the University of Oregon free of tuition and fees. We make up any shortcomings in their financial aid package through tuition remissions and privately funded scholarships. We do our best to take care of our most needy students and offer 4 times the amount of financial aid that the state provides to the university. The wealthiest students still know that the University of Oregon is one of the great bargains in the Western world. It's the middle class that's being squeezed and squeezed and squeezed by the current situation. The new endowment provides the funding stability that will allow us to transfer that stability and predictability to our students. We can't offer such a tuition guarantee program under the current structure because we have to maintain the quality of our educational experience and we have to keep the doors of educational opportunity open. The only way to do this is to stabilize the funding situation. The combined effect of SB 559 as amended and SJR 20 is that Oregon will have an accountable local governing board, ongoing involvement of the legislature and the governor in tuition decisions, and a tuition guarantee program through the enactment of the new public-private endowment funding model. We believe SJR 20 and SB 559 offer a very real solution to a 20-year-old problem and at no additional cost to the state. Why is this important to do now? Because we're falling behind. And without big change, dramatic change, we will continue to fall behind and have no opportunity to catch up. In light of the state's economic situation, we can't count on state funding increases to be the means by which we increase the number of students that we educate. We have to leverage private investment to make real progress on our goals. Consider these facts. 20 years ago, in 1991, the University of Oregon received $63 million in state funding support. Today, 20 years later, 2011, we are projected to receive $58 million. If you take out the federal stimulus funding, it will only be $50 million. And we're serving 23,389 students today, an increase of 40% over what the enrollment was in 1991. Using this base state funding, we have $11 million in nominal dollars than we did 20 years ago. Adjusted for inflation over that 20 years, we have 43% less money to support a 40% increase in student enrollment. What does that mean? It means we remain behind our peers in state funding per student. We remain behind our peers in competitive faculty salaries. And it means tuition has gone up 241% since 1991. It means that the University of Oregon receives just 7% of its funding from the state budget and ranks dead last in state funding per student among public universities in the Association of American Universities. It means that without change, resident student tuition at UO will skyrocket to $17,000 a year by 2020. It means that we are violating the sacred trust of our mission to preserve public higher education. This is unacceptable and certainly not sustainable. But we have the opportunity this session with these bills to end this situation. We all know the problem too well. So the question before us today and during this legislative session is, what are we going to do about it? The new partnership offers a better alternative to the current system of governance and opens the door to an unprecedented promise of tuition guarantee. This partnership will provide stable funding. It will reverse the 20-year trend of disinvestment in our post-secondary education system. It will strengthen public accountability. It will allow us to focus on how to enhance the educational experience for our students instead of fighting for a smaller piece of the funding pie every 2 years. To remind everyone of the details of this proposal, the new partnership has three primary components. The first is governance reform. The new partnership has greater management autonomy from state government combined with a publicly appointed governing board for universities that want them. Our proposal for local governing boards fits nicely with the current State Board of Higher Education or the new board envisioned in SB 242, setting statewide policies and goals for the Oregon's universities, or with Governor Kitzhaber's proposal for a new single education policy and investment board. We believe universities need greater autonomy to be successful and greater leadership and accountability that will come from local governing boards. The second component of the new partnership is increased accountability. With a new governing board, performance goals established by a state-level authority will be more likely to succeed. SB 559 decentralizes management, creating publicly appointed and publicly accountable governing boards for the UO and other schools that want them. This plan already works effectively for Oregon's community college system, OHSU, the Port of Portland, and in many other states like Washington, Ohio, Virginia, and I could go on. In fact, with the inclusion of the California, with the exclusion of the California universities, most of the top public universities in America have their own local governing boards. University of Michigan, University of Virginia, and closer to home are Pac-12 peers, the University of Washington and Washington State University. All of these states have a state-level coordinating board that approves degree programs and holds these institutions accountable to serving the state's respective needs through performance metrics. We believe Oregon's model should be similar, and we have been working with a faculty committee for more than a year and have developed 15 accountability metrics to ensure that the UO remains focused on serving the state's needs. The performance goals range from in-state enrollment to the number of degrees to research expenditures, patent and license income, and more. We are committed to measuring our performance against serving the state's needs. The final component is a new funding partnership. By creating a public endowment using the existing funding provided by the state and matched with private donations dollar for dollar, we can finally end the unstable and unpredictable funding of the last two decades. This new funding partnership will create certainty for the legislature, for the university, for our students, for our faculty, and at no increased cost to the state. Just to remind the committee, SJR 20 is a legislative referral that asks the voters whether or not state bonds can be used to fund state endowments. It has no immediate fiscal impact. It will be up to the legislature and the governor to determine at a later date how much and when bonds should be allocated for this purpose. The governance change is important and critical to our mission. What's more important to families, however, is affordability, a guarantee that they can afford to send their children to a university of the quality of the University of Oregon. With the recent Oregon University System proposal, we can make the promise that if you work hard and earn a 3.4 grade point average and meet other requirements, that you are guaranteed admittance to one of the University of Oregon's universities. But we must make this guarantee meaningful and make sure that that university experience is also affordable. That's why we support the amendment to SB 559 that would cap tuition increases for Oregon residents. Under our amendment, the University of Oregon Board of Directors would only have the authority to increase tuition up to 5% on an annual basis. Anything over 5% would require approval by the legislature and the governor. As a reminder, SB 559 already establishes unprecedented student involvement in the decisions around tuition. As a UO student, we'll serve on the new University of Oregon Board as a voting member. We feel strongly that in order to truly make the University of Oregon operate at full capacity with the highest quality of faculty, staff, and students, we must work on both the governance and the funding issues in concert with one another. It's the only means of addressing the issue of tuition and affordability. We fail students if we offer them affordability without the full promise of quality and accountability. I hope to work with you further on both of these issues. In conclusion, let me point out that this is a unique moment in the history of our state and higher education. We have a window of opportunity to finally address long-standing challenges and to reposition our universities to become even stronger. This will help position the state for greater economic success when we come out of this current recession. If we are successful, we will be able to plan for our future and create a better educational experience for our students. We can be known as a state that values higher education and invests in our state's economic future by investing in our students. It has been said time and again, but we truly are at a point where if we don't take actions similar to what we've outlined here, we will never be the Oregon that we have the potential to be. I know that you want more for your students and for our state. Change is seldom easy. It is always suspect in some quarters, but it is inevitable. We have the power to chart a course of change that will improve our state. We stand ready to help make the hard but necessary steps so that we can chart that new path for higher education in Oregon and be a leader in this as we are in so many other areas. Thank you for hearing the bills today. I appreciate your attention to these critical issues more than you probably know, and I look forward to addressing any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, President LaRiviere, and I do want to acknowledge and thank you for your thoughtfulness on this issue. You played a large role in elevating the discussion of higher education in this state. Questions, comments? Senator Morse?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your testimony. My question focuses on Section 7 of the bill, and just for convenience, I'd like to read the first sentence. The University of Oregon Board of Directors may, within or outside the state, do all things necessary or convenient involving matters of concern to the University of Oregon, including without limitation the following, and then there's a number of issues. And my question is, if this was adopted, what would be the relationship to the State Board of Higher Education?
Well, the State Board of a Higher Education, in whatever form it ends up being, or some similar successor entity, would function as a coordinating board. And the normal structure, the structure that is common in many other states, is that there's an overarching coordinating board that determines whether or not new degrees should be approved for specific institutions, sets goals and standards for levels of education. So, for example, the implementation of the 40-40-20 would be articulated as each institution under the jurisdiction of that coordinating board would be charged with the responsibility to produce so many graduates a year, that sort of thing. Does that answer your question?
Well, looking at the bill, I didn't see it enumerated in any way how that relationship exists.
No. Well,
that's a granular question.
Right. We probably have someone who could specifically address that here. Jeff Condit is our expert on these intergovernmental relationships. He could probably answer it more thoroughly than I have just done.
But Mr. Chair, we have a lot of people to testify, and I'd like to take this issue,
sure,
and we can discuss it at
sure
a future time.
Right.
But I do raise that issue of what is that relationship, and how does it work in the future?
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thank you for your eloquent testimony. I wanted to ask you what would happen if Senate Bill 559 passed but SJR 20 did not. Are they dependent upon each other?
Well, Senate Bill 559 is focused exclusively on governance and does not really address the issue of affordability, of predictability of revenue streams, et cetera. That's what SJR 20 helps us to do. Governance and funding together are really crucial for us to fulfill our mission. And our problem is that, from our standpoint, governance is very important, and we know about the nuts and bolts of the operation of complex institutions. But for our families and for our students, they're really concerned about what it's going to cost them to get this high-quality education. And without SJR 20, we can't address the cost side.
Understood. Can I ask another? Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a brief follow-up. You said in your testimony that U of O receives just 7% of its funding from the state budget and ranks dead last in state funding per student among public universities in the Association of American Universities, and I agree that's definitely not something to be proud of. How does it compare to the other universities in the state?
We are also dead last.
So just to follow up, Mr. Chair, just to clarify that the 7% University of Oregon is the same as the other universities in the state in terms of the percentage of funding.
Actually, I'm only certain, relatively certain, about the funding per student. I also think that we are last in terms of the percentage of our operating budget, but I'm not certain about that.
Thank you.
Senator Shields?
Actually, I'll pass.
Yeah, I'm getting head nods that we are indeed in first place or last place, depending on your perspective.
Okay. Well, we thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
From the Oregon University System, Board Member Jill Island is here. Jill, welcome.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Dr. Bailey. Thank you, Chair Hoff, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jill Island, and I'm a member of the State Board of Higher Education, a native Oregonian, and, full disclosure, a tuition-paying parent. We believe that Oregon is a state that doesn't embrace significant change without serious contemplation, meaningful public process, and lots of deliberation to reach consensus around the best path for our state. Our board believes that an approach for one institution is not the right solution for the state of Oregon. Rather, we need to focus on achieving the goals of the 40-40-20 and find ways to improve our entire system of higher education, not take it apart piece by piece. As you well know from your service on this committee, there has been a very thorough public review of the bill that's pending before your committee, the 242. The Board of Higher Education has gone through a comprehensive and inclusive public process for more than a year, developing, debating, and vetting a governance solution for the entire Oregon University system, which would transition the OUS from a state agency to a public university system. As we worked to develop our governance proposal, we were led by the critical question that should guide all substantial governance change conversations. That question is, what best helps us achieve the goals of the 40-40-20, and what is the right solution for all Oregonians? As we worked hard to find the right solution for the state of Oregon, engaging the various constituencies was instrumental in ensuring that all voices were part of the process in a very real way. We weren't just giving lip service to inclusiveness and then moving forward alone. The components of the OUS governance proposal were drafted by the people who will be most affected by them. And while this has extended the time it has taken for us to reach consensus, the proposal is stronger, more inclusive, and more structured in a way that will stand the test of time and of challenges that we will certainly face in the future. We believe strongly that the OUS governance proposal, as embraced by Senate Bill 242, will educate more Oregon students, provide more degrees, and enable a more competitive Oregon. The University of Oregon is one of our fine institutions that stands to gain the most from a new public university system enveloped in Senate Bill 242, because the University of Oregon has one of the largest fund balances in our system, which our proposal would protect, and would enable the U of O to retain the interest earned from tuition paid by their students, in addition to a multitude of flexibility gains and cost savings measures. All seven institution presidents, including President LaRiviere, support the OUS governance proposal. I'm proud to say that the Board of Higher Education is already working to undertake a rigorous examination of institutional or local boards over the next year, and we plan to work closely with the newly created Education Policy and Investment Board, appointed by Governor Kitzhaber, to ensure that a meaningful, inclusive, and public conversation is had on this subject. We agree with Governor Kitzhaber that a systematic approach to governance is best, and ultimately we're open to having the discussion of other models of governance that exist in other states, examining best practices, finding a solution that meets the needs of Oregon. And I'll note, too, that a member of the State Board of Higher Education, Matt Donegan, has been appointed to serve on Governor Kitzhaber's Education Policy Board. In summary, the Board of Higher Education has focused its examination, research, and vetting efforts on a statewide governance system that is inclusive of all campuses, students, and stakeholders. While the Interim Legislative Higher Education Work Group reviewed the proposal before you today, they and the State Board of Higher Education opted to support a system-wide proposal that is focused on meeting the needs of the entire state. We believe that Senate Bill 242 is the right proposal to move our entire system of higher education to the next level and better enable us to meet the critically important educational goals of the state. The Board of Higher Education is appointed to pay attention to our fiduciary responsibility, the governance, and the leadership of the 7 public universities in Oregon. It is the public body charged by this legislature to have these meaningful conversations, and I can assure you that the board does not take the responsibility of leading our system during these turbulent times lightly. We look forward to collaborating with you to enable the state of Oregon to succeed. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Jill Island? Comments? Thank you.
Thank you.
I have some panels of people signed up here, and I do want to remind everyone to be as brief as possible. Don't feel the need to read your comments. They'll be turned in. When you turn them in, they'll be entered into the record. So I'm going down the list here with Cindy Astley, Carissa Siris, and Laura Potter.
Thank you. My name is Carissa Siris, and I am a psychology major at the University of Oregon and also graduating in the spring. I am the president of the Student Alumni Association and also a native Eugenian. We are told that growing up that a college education is the key to a successful career. We are shown graphs and statistics about our earning power with a college degree, and we are told that we'll build stronger communities and a better economy. Yet the message we get from the legislature is contradictory. As a student, it is depressing to see the declining level of state support for all of our colleges, and has been happening for a long time. I know it was hard for the students that came before me. I know it is tough for me and the students I'm attending class with, but it is hard to imagine how anyone can go to school in 2020 if the projections are correct and tuition will cost $17,000 a year. We can't wait any longer. If you pass Senate Bill 559, for the first time in the history of the University of Oregon, a student will have a voice in the setting of tuition. I believe you will see an increase in involvement of students and faculty in the direction of the university. And do you, the legislature, will have more insight into how the university operates? Because I've heard that it works at OHSU. They have a student on the board, and their board has been extremely successful. I understand that you have a lot of higher education proposals before you. Please take action on the one that will address student tuition. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas and members of the Education and Workforce Development Committee. My name is Cindy Astley, and I live here in Salem, and I'm a proud duck. I'm testifying today in favor of the University of Oregon's partnership plan as detailed in the two bills. As a state, we cannot miss this opportunity to set public universities on a path to funding and success with that in ensuring that education remains in reach for all Oregonians. As a single mom of two, I talk to my boys all the time about higher education. And basically the theme is, you will go. Thankfully, they want to go, but they realize that they have a responsibility. The first thing is that they must get good grades. They must get accepted. And besides that, they have a responsibility to pay for one term of each of their 4 years when they secure their bachelor's degree. The clink to this plan is, how much is a term? It's really hard for a student, a young student, and quite frankly a mom, to save without a solid dollar figure in mind. I'm very thankful for my job and that I'm a middle-class Oregonian. I know that my boys will not be eligible for low-income support. I hope that their knowledge and their educational aspirations pull in some scholarships. And along with that, any grandparent money and money they save on their own goes towards their term. I know firsthand that tuition rates are becoming less attainable. And I've discussed this as I've learned about these two bills and the more that I get educated with my boys. And I was reviewing my testimony with them last night, and I want to give you a quote from my 10-year-old. So if I pay for one term for 4 years, I have to save $24,000? Mom, I need a better paying job, because 25 cents every time I unload the dishwasher ain't going to cut it. Out of the mouth of babes. At a time when college education is increasing to a person's ability to be successful in this 21st century, Oregon cannot afford this disinvestment in higher education. I have a very favorite poem. It's called Builder, and I want to just do two lines for you. Am I a builder who works with care, measuring life by rule and square? Or am I a wrecker who stalks the town, content with the labor of tearing down? I know each one of you did not become a legislator to tear down Oregon. But you did this so that you could build her up, so that we would be the best state in the nation. I applaud your service. And it's an exciting time to be a legislator, because you have the great opportunity to build a system to stabilize higher education. I hope that you capitalize on this opportunity and become an architect of the future of higher education. I support both the bills presented by the University of Oregon and the partnership plan, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas, members of the committee. My name is Laura Potter. I'm the Director of Business Advocacy at the Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce. The Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce is pleased to offer our support of the new partnership proposal. In this environment of shrinking state resources and continuing disinvestment in higher education in Oregon, we need bold ideas and creative thinking to help Oregon regain its rightful place as a national leader in education. The greater Eugene-Springfield area counts on the University of Oregon as a driver of our regional economy. The university is critical as an employer and is one of the top 25 universities for startup formation and for licensing return per dollar invested. We know that the university continues to play an important role in the entrepreneurship and the development of important industry clusters in our region. Each year, the UO brings millions of dollars into our economy, and of course, more than 4,000 residents from the Eugene metro and surrounding areas pursue a college education at the university. There is broad agreement among the business community leaders, education professionals, and many elected leaders alike. The status quo in Oregon education is not acceptable. Nearly all agree that the pattern of reduced state support for education must end, that a stable source of funding must be found, and the Oregon universities must modernize their governance to provide increased accountability, flexibility, and responsiveness. Until now, specific solutions have been very hard to find. The Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce applauds the university's willingness to courageously pursue innovative ideas that would take the next steps towards putting higher education back on sound footing. On behalf of the greater Eugene-Springfield business community, we urge you to pass SB 559 and SJR 20. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions or comments of this panel? Okay, thank you. Emma Calloway, Emily Rousseau, Yasmin Abera. Welcome.
Hello, Chair Haas and committee members. My name is Yasmin Ibarra, and I am the student body president at Western Oregon University and also the vice chair for the Oregon Student Association. As you know, OSA presents over 100,000 students statewide, and we have voted unanimously to oppose SB 559 and SJR 20.
Could I get you to... There you go.
Okay. I'm here to share the concerns of students we represent statewide. First and foremost, OSA believes in the ability of a statewide system to maintain accessible and affordable post-secondary education for all Oregonians. The National Center for Public Policy in Higher Education stated, states that use a single board to govern all four-year institutions are much more likely to have higher graduation rates compared with those states with mixed governance arrangements. A statewide system is important to meeting the goals of our state, like 40-40-20. With all our resources and finest institutions working together, we can achieve more than if each institution works in a silo. OSA knows a statewide system is better for Oregon families. We have come out in support of SB 242, pending a few amendments still being worked out. SB 242 allows for the flexibility institutions like the U of O has been asking for, but maintains accountability to elected officials and keeps students involved in meeting our statewide goals. In 1929, we created a statewide system in this state because there was too much infighting and competition between going on between schools. If this legislative session is any indication of the conflicts that could arise, OSA would again prefer a system that thinks about the benefits of all its players. U of O claims to be able to stabilize tuition costs with a large endowment, but also testifies that they don't need all the bonding up front. How could this be? Doesn't this leave us vulnerable in a situation like California, where tuition has somewhat stabilized, but now 30% higher than a year ago? We know the state is starving for revenue, and yes, none of the other restructuring plans have a revenue plan attached to them, but creating a plan around a 9 to 9.5 yield expectancy is not bold, it's risky. This is not the time to pass a bill that crosses the line from risky to reckless. Students are in trouble taking twice the amount of debt than a student 10 years ago. Oregon is in the top 20% of more price-sensitive states. Without checks and balances from the OUS and the legislature, we could see the U of O as only a place for the very wealthy or for the few fortunate to receive a scholarship. During a time when others are working together to solve problems, the new partnership relies on an $800 million bond request. This request will nearly max out our debt capacity and possibly prevent Oregon's other public universities from erecting a building for 5 to 10 years. And if the U of O takes the bond in pieces, it will be impossible to keep tuition stable the way U of O promises they will. We do not support SJR 20, but we will continue to ask why the university feels the need to have full autonomy and risk a new revenue the likes of which public post-secondary education has never seen. Lastly, there's a lot to consider with this proposal of this nature. The higher education group that has vetted through these restructuring proposals over the last year was presented with the U of O's new partnership, and the work group chose to further develop a statewide system. Key stakeholders, the higher education legislative group, and students have all chosen to work with the statewide system and reach our goals together as a state. We ask that you please vote no on SB 559 and SJR 20. Thank you. And now I'll pass it on to Amelie.
Hi, Chair Hash and members of the committee. My name is Amelie Rousseau. I'm the student body president at U of O, as well as a member of the Oregon Student Association. I'm here today in opposition to SB 559 and SJR 20. We believe the system of higher education in Oregon needs a change, but a proposal that only focuses on the goals and needs of one institution is not bold, it's tunnel vision. As a U of O student, I know we need system-wide reform. Today, I would like to speak briefly to my concerns regarding governance, tuition, our public mission, and lastly, the petition signatures we have collected. We are first concerned with the minimizing of student involvement under SB 559. Over the years, students have raised valuable concerns and come up with creative solutions, and we must continue to be involved in this process. With only one student voting on the local board of 15 appointed members, we are very concerned that students' interests will be barely heard or prioritized. While a local board might be more familiar with the university's budget, it does not mean they will be more judicious in their priorities. We want a public institution that keeps our class sizes down and protects student services and doesn't prioritize capital construction projects. The most widely felt issue on campus is the rising cost of tuition.
Excuse me, Emma, could you back up just a tad?
Yeah, sorry. Is that better? Yeah. The most widely felt issue on campus is the rising cost of our tuition. I heard the testimony today and were interested in the idea of tuition caps, but I'd like to give a statewide perspective as well. Oregon is one of the lowest rates of tuition increases in the country, especially compared to states like Washington and California. You as legislators have prioritized affordable tuition and, when necessary, placed budget notes to cap tuition increases. States across the country like Texas, California, Washington, and Pennsylvania have deregulated their public universities, and these same institutions have seen tuition hikes of 15, 20, and even 30%. Other schools such as the University of Washington have broken away from their state boards, and tuition there is rising 14% this year and 14% the next. Like I said, Oregon has one of the lowest increases in tuition in the nation, and that is precisely because we have a state board and the legislature to regulate tuition increases. If the university really wants to remain a public institution, then we need those setting the tuition to be accountable to voters. The U of O will tell you that they want to stabilize tuition. Students are worried that stable means a school with a stable tuition that is only obtainable to upper and middle class Oregonians. A 5% tuition cap only ensures that our tuition will rise 5% every year. The other way to stabilize tuition is to bring more out-of-state students. 49% of our freshman class this year is out-of-state. As a student and taxpayer in Oregon, I ask that we do not bond $800 million so fewer and fewer Oregonians can obtain a degree from our flagship institution. Lastly, I would like to talk about the worth of the University of Oregon to all of us. It is concerning to see such a valued public asset being priced so much lower than it could possibly be worth. It appears that no one has done a thorough study of the assets of the U of O, including property, facilities, and other areas that Oregon has invested in over 100 years, making it impossible to determine a fair market value for the campus. This information is critical in evaluating if granting independence for $800 million in bonds is fair to Oregon stakeholders. I've heard an estimate range of $6 to $10 billion. It will be a real loss to our system if we lowball the value of our university and move towards privatizing the U of O. There are many questions that still need to be addressed. What happens 30 years from now when the bond is paid off to ensure that U of O will remain a public institution? Private money, especially $800 million worth, will come with strings attached. Let's not compromise the mission of public education in Oregon just to get through a few years of tough times. At this time, I'd like to respectfully submit our first 1,200 signatures of U of O students who oppose SB 559. We want our university to be affordable and accessible to all Oregon students for years to come. Thank you.
Emily, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
There's an amendment being drafted here that would cap tuition at no more than 5% on this bill. Would that change your view of things?
I mean, potentially we're interested in the idea of tuition caps, but I still think that there are major issues with the governance structure and the use of accepting private money. Yeah.
Senator
George? Emily, I guess my question to you is this, is that I clearly see this as a financial risk. There's no doubt about it. But we have the opportunity to attract private investors who are willing to come in and basically underwrite part of our university system and really create a unique partnership that would be beneficial both to the university and maybe universities and the students. And it seems like to me that this is a huge opportunity to bring private capital in to help take our university systems to the next level. So I'm really trying to get at, because I heard your testimony, I'm trying to get at what your real objection is. Because from my perspective as a U of O student, it is nothing but benefit to you. Now, I have to make the decision on bonding authority and some of these other decisions and what the impacts are on other schools. But from the U of O student perspective, this is private dollars coming in to support your university and your degrees and your institution in a way that just seems like an opportunity of a lifetime to bring those kind of private dollars in to basically stabilize the university. So clarify a little bit more for me, because I'm not getting your opposition.
Mm-hmm.
I understand what you said. I just don't see how that equates to the interests of the university students.
I think there's a few concerns that we have. I think that, like I mentioned in my testimony, anytime we're accepting private money, there's usually, and there are right now, strings attached for how that money should be spent. And we're seeing kind of a shift of priorities from academics to other things that we have a lot of concerns about, and we don't want that trend to continue. And we worry with increased deregulation, that kind of expenditure oversight isn't going to be there, and it's going to get worse.
Senator George?
Again, it's being a little vague, and maybe sometime you come by my office and we can discuss a little bit more detail. Maybe you don't necessarily want to do this in the openness of a public hearing.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
So feel free. But what I'm trying to still get at is that I understand that when donors give money, they want certain things done. But that usually brings accountability. When you say strings attached, I'm having a hard time following that, because strings attached usually means that whoever the donor is wants to make sure that the dollars are being spent wisely, most efficiently to benefit the university. And I just want to say, this is a tough decision on this side of the dais, but from your perspective, this is nothing but upside of bringing private investment into the U of O, and I just, I'm having a little hard time kind of accepting the arguments that have been put here, so if we could expand on that sometime.
Sure, and I can definitely, at a later time, point out specific examples, but I think that the other issue, too, is the issue of putting state money into a private investment company. That's really worrying for a lot of Oregonians and a lot of students.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you both. Cheryl Perrin, Chris Smith, and Paul Weinhold.
Okay, Chair Haas, members of the committee. I'm Cheryl Perrin. I'm a current trustee on the University of Oregon Foundation Board. I'm the chair of the Foundation's Advocacy Committee. I'm here today in support of SB 559 and SJR 20. Separating the OUS system from its current overwhelming oversight by the legislature is critical, and now is the time to take that step. Thank you, Chair Haas, and all the other legislators who have worked so hard and focused on higher ed during the interim committee. We appreciate that, and we believe strongly that you are moving vigorously in the right direction. While this is an important step forward, I would suggest that more can and should be done to assure excellence for higher ed in Oregon. SB 559 addresses solutions. It simply permits the University of Oregon to have the ability to proactively manage how we achieve the state-established performance goals. Keith Thompson wrote an excellent op-ed column that was published in yesterday's Oregonian. I'm assuming that some of you saw it, maybe all of you did. He and I had similar experiences in public and private institutions. Keith at Intel, I was at Fred Meyer. I served 10 years as a commissioner for the Port of Portland, much of that time concurrent with Keith Thompson's service. The Port of Portland is a government agency established by Oregon statute, governed by a 9-member commission appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. The port is often referred to as the economic engine for the state of Oregon. The governing structure is efficient, effective, and successful. Although the territory is only the Tri-County area, it serves the entire state and much of Southwest Washington. Its governance model would serve the University of Oregon and indeed all the seven universities well to achieve a strong and excellent higher education system for the state of Oregon. SJR 20 asks the voters if the state could modestly assist any university that wants to create a tuition-lowering endowment fund. Tuition stability is crucial for most college-eligible students. Daily, we read the horror stories of young graduates burdened with 5 and sometimes 6-figure debt. That is totally unacceptable, especially when we know how to promise state tuition stability. We need only your help to do so. These two proposals are not gigantic leaps forward, but they can start us down the path to growing a stronger university system. We must stop the decline that we've been witnessing for the last few decades. Oregon deserves better for jobs, for students, and clearly for the future. Thank you for working hard to improve the public education system in the state of Oregon, both K through all the way through whatever year you want to finish school. I urge you to seriously consider the new partnership for all of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Chair Haas, members of the committee. My name is Chris Smith. I reside in Lake Oswego, and I own two businesses in Oregon, CAS Properties and Design Systems Northwest, both of which are Oregon-grown companies. Without the education I received at the University of Oregon, I wouldn't have been able to develop those companies and end up where I am today. For over 30 years, our companies were involved in the Oregon economy as developers, performing planning, building, and landscape design services, as well as general contractors. During that time, we employed directly and indirectly hundreds of Oregon citizens, including many graduates of the University of Oregon. Our goals include the desire to see those individuals break out and establish their own firms using the training we were able to provide. It would not have been possible for my business to grow without the education I received in architecture at the University of Oregon. Oregon's economy is sustained by Oregon-grown small businesses. As I'm sure you're aware, 75% of Oregon firms have less than 50 employees. I truly believe that in order to continue to grow small businesses like mine in Oregon, we must have a well-educated workforce. I think you believe that as well, which is why you've already undertaken efforts in reforming our system of higher education. I commend you for those efforts. However, I'm here today. You've heard many before me, and you'll hear many after me. We need to go one step further than we've gone so far. I join with the majority of Oregonians who believe in restructuring the Oregon University system is an important first step, but just the first step. It's virtually important that we take the next steps proposed in the new partnership legislation, SB 559 and SJR 20. Based on my business background and my work with a variety of nonprofit boards and organizations, I can't fathom the idea of an $800 million operating entity working without a dedicated board. Each organization has specific needs and interests, and an increased board is more flexible, responsive, and accountable. I opened my business in the mid-70s, at a time when the Oregon economy was hot. By the early 80s, we were in a severe recession. Many firms like mine were gone. Many people were underemployed or unemployed, just like they are again today. But because of the excellent education I was able to receive at the University of Oregon, I was able to grow my business each and every day until I've semi-retired now for 30 years. Now I'm able to spend time giving back to Oregon, the state that I love and the state that I see help me through my business endeavors. Please support us in these measures and these bills. There are many Oregonians like myself that you don't hear from. You don't hear from the small guy that lives in Oregon. They don't come in and testify very often for you. But we do care. We love this state. We've grown our businesses in this state. And we want the state to succeed and move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Paul Weinhold, and I am the president of the University of Oregon Foundation, and I'm here today on behalf of the 45 trustees from the United States and around the world to urge your support for SB 559 and SJR 20. On a personal note, I am a native Oregonian and a graduate of the University of Oregon. In fact, I was the first person in my family to graduate from college, so I understand the importance of accessibility and affordability of public higher education. We all agree that big changes are needed to our state system of higher education. I commend you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the legislature for your leadership in the past year in pursuing critical reforms. Given the gravity of the problem, we believe the danger for Oregon isn't in doing too much to reform higher education this year. The danger lies in doing too little. To that end, we strongly support legislation to free universities from outdated rules and to provide them greater autonomy to manage their operations. We also believe that state higher education goals and policies should be set by a single wide state authority, like what exists today or what has been proposed by Governor Kitzhaber. But a change from state agency status shouldn't be the limit of our ambitions. We must also act to strengthen accountability, transparency, and oversight of our universities through a dedicated governing boards as envisioned in SB 559. And most important, we must take action now to strengthen the funding for student access to our universities, which SJR 20 offers the promise of achieving. To my knowledge, SJR 20 is the only proposal being advanced this session to address funding and access. The plan has many details that you've heard, but in general it would allow state universities to create endowment funds and match private donations dollar for dollar with public funds generated from sale of state bonds. The University of Oregon Foundation recently commissioned a poll of Oregonians on this idea, and we are pleased to learn that 71% of the voters favored the idea in concept, and 57% would support a measure on the ballot next year to create endowments if given the chance. We hope that you give them that chance. The U of O Foundation has chosen to engage in higher education reform debate because we believe, like all of you, that Oregon can no longer give lip service to the importance of higher education to our economy and to social progress of our state. We urge you to embrace not just the ideas we have advanced, but all of the ideas being considered to save Oregon's higher education. Oregon is worth it, and Oregonians are ready for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you, Foundation members and trustees. Appreciate your time and service. The Oregon State Treasurer is represented here today by Michael Salvaggio.
Thank you.
Chair House, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Michael Salvaggio from the Office of the State Treasurer. I'll be very brief and say that the Treasury has no position in particular on these two bills. I'm not here to speak to the relative value of the legislation, but merely bringing forward several elements of the bill that the Treasury decided needed to be altered for various technical reasons, and we are already working with the university to address those. But to place those on record, with regards to Senate Bill 559, state general obligations absolutely must have first claim to any revenues or assets of the university. The university must provide for the repayment of state-issued obligations before additional obligations are issued by an independent university. And the University of Oregon, we don't feel, should be able to grant a security interest in any property financed by the state of Oregon, as that would, as either step would impair the, I should say, have the potential to impair the state's debt ratings. This is similar to amendments proposed to Senate Bill 242, and I believe that we are working with the University of Oregon lobbyists in crafting those amendments. Additionally, there needs to be an indemnity clause requiring the university to pay damages, legal fees, etc., for any state bonds issued on behalf of the university, as I understand that that is still a step that the state can take to issue bonds on behalf of the university. Additionally, there's some technical language that needs to be conformed with regards to the definition of revenues when it comes to 11F and 11G bonds issued on behalf of the university, and also the definition of state agency for the purposes of state bonds. And that is the extent of my testimony at this time, and I will open to any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you, Michael. With respect to SJR 20, where are we with the moratorium on bonding?
Chair House, members of the committee, any bonding that the state chooses to undertake is at the discretion of the Legislative Assembly. The Debt Policy Advisory Commission has recommended a very thin amount of bonding probably available this biennium, and we'll be seeing some more capacity beginning next biennium. As I understand, SGR 20 wouldn't be up in front of the voters until, I believe it's 2012, and someone could correct me on that if I'm wrong. But it would have to pass that particular election before any bonding was undertaken, and our debt capacity would be opened up somewhat by that time. And at that point, it would be up to the Legislative Assembly to determine how they wanted to prioritize that capacity.
Good. Questions? Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Mark Nissenfeld, SEIU.
Chair Haas and members of the committee, and thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify here today. My name is Mark Nissenfeld, and I'm here representing SEIU, and I work at Portland State University. With all due respect to Mr. LaRiviere and Senator Edwards, go Vikings. I serve on our union's board of directors, representing our members who work in the Oregon University system, and I chair the Higher Ed Council. That's a committee tasked with addressing issues pertaining to OUS as they relate to our members and to our union. Over the past year, SEIU members who work at Oregon's seven universities have been very engaged in the restructure process and discussions. On our campuses, SEIU represents roughly 4,000 workers who provide direct services to students. On campuses, we enroll and admit students, provide help with financial aid issues, perform all operations of facilities from maintenance to construction. We provide support for research. We develop and maintain safety and environmental programs, including hazardous waste collection. Incidentally, part of our endorsement process when a candidate is asking for our endorsement is a program we called Walk a Day in the Shoes of One of Our Workers. And last year, then-candidate Kitzhaber walked a day in the shoes of our hazardous waste collector and helped out on campus with that. He did okay. We do much, much more on the campuses. In short, We're the front line to the students, our reason for existing in the first place. Our members are proud of the role they play in the everyday life of our universities. When the conversations regarding restructure began, our Higher Ed Council sponsored a leadership conference with the goal of defining our principles for a vibrant higher education system in Oregon. Since then, these principles have been adopted by SEIU members at all seven campuses and by our union's governing board. I'm here today as a representative of SEIU 503 to testify against Senate Bill 559 because we don't believe it meets three of the most basic principles our members have laid out. First, SEIU members believe a statewide public higher education system that serves all areas of the state best serves the needs of Oregonians. We believe that a system approach to higher education is the only way that we can ensure that the state's goals are being prioritized and we can balance the needs of campuses, students, and the state. Next, we prioritize transparency and accountability to the citizens of Oregon and the legislature in our higher education system. While we have concerns regarding transparency of information from the campuses with the current structure, we believe Senate Bill 559 would add another board and structure that is even less accountable to the governor, the legislature, and the citizens of Oregon. And finally, as classified workers, we value being state employees. And we believe a move to a local board such as 559 lays out, it would further separate us from our counterparts in the Department of Administrative Services. Above and beyond our concerns regarding how Senate Bill 559 fits into our principles, we also have questions about how SJR 20 would impact overall bonding for the state. It remains unclear how the University of Oregon's proposed near $1 billion bond would impact the bonding capabilities of the other six campuses, bonds critical for a variety of necessary capital projects. SEIU members have seen and felt the impact of cuts to higher education over the past 20 years. Every year we are asked to do more with less. As we try to put our own children through college, we feel the impact of increasing tuition on our middle-class families. We understand that there needs to be change, and in the spirit of seeking a positive resolution, our union supports Senate Bill 242 with an additional amendment addressing concerns regarding remaining a part of PEB, the Public Employees Benefits Board. Because we understand we need to do things differently. We don't believe that SB 559 moves our higher education system in the right direction. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you. Ian McNeely, John Chalmers, Bruce Waltz, and Alan Brown. I want to remind everybody to be as brief as possible. We're going to be thrown out of this room here.
Chairman Haas, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Ian F. McNeely, and I'm an associate professor of history at UL. At UL, I chair several faculty committees, including our university-wide academic council. In that capacity, I have studied the new partnership in detail and led the production of a report endorsing it. The UL Academic Council report found first that the new partnership's financial model is a sound one. It tackles the two problems of long-term disinvestment and short-term funding instability. Academic investments like library collections and tenure-track positions are measured in decades, not in biennial cycles. To thrive, UO needs long-term sustenance as well as short-term stability. Second, we found that the proposed UO board resembles the governance systems of very many universities across the nation, both public and private. Boards of directors enjoy sweeping powers but rarely interfere negatively with the academic missions of the universities they govern. The proposed UO board is, in fact, unusually inclusive even among public universities in featuring both student and faculty representatives as members. Third, we noted that the separate OUS plan, now codified in Senate Bill 242, does not adequately address the problem of disinvestment and funding instability, despite offering welcome relief from burdensome micromanagement. Fourth, we raised the most questions regarding the performance benchmarks that would be imposed on the UO by the State Board of Higher Education under the new partnership. I like to think of these benchmarks as taking the hundreds of tiny strings that the state currently uses to control UO and replacing them with a dozen or so giant levers. There is a possibility that increasing our accountability to the state in this way will actually squelch the freedom and flexibility that have historically driven great universities. But this, it seems, is an appropriate trade-off for other aspects of the new partnership that move us toward greater autonomy. As a young faculty member who plans to retire in about 30 years, I may have to live with this proposal or the failure to enact it longer than anyone else in this room. So I'd like to end on a personal note. 11 years ago, I turned down a job at a wealthy private university in Manhattan to come to the University of Oregon. The pay is lower, but the grass is literally greener here. I've never regretted it because the academic differences between America's best private universities and its best public universities are not all that great. The UO punches way above its weight. It is a national treasure and, for that reason, an asset to the people of Oregon as well. The new partnership is the only plan before the legislature that preserves UO's national academic reputation and its dedication to Oregonians, including my own children, at the same time. It is a win-win proposal, and I urge you to enact it. Thank you again.
Thank you, Chair Haas and members of the committee. My name is John Chalmers. I'm an associate professor and the department head in the finance department at the University of Oregon. I'm also a tuition payer two times over for two of my children right now. I'm representing the University Senate Budget Committee. This fall, the president of the University Senate, Nathan Tublitz, asked the Senate Budget Committee to evaluate the new partnership plan, and I'm here to represent that group. That group included faculty who have over 10 years experience, all of them, some of which have over 20 years of experience from architecture, chemistry, economics, and various other disciplines, my own finance. And what the Senate Budget Committee came to the conclusion that we believe that the new partnership takes a leap forward. It's a plan that can improve the quality and access to the University of Oregon with three primary benefits. The primary benefits are that it provides for predictable funding, where we haven't had that in any of our tenure at the university. It provides for the substantial likelihood of funding increases, and it provides for magnificent it provides a magnificent fundraising tool. So, in conclusion, I'll be very brief. The Senate Budget Committee is very much in favor of the new partnership plan and the Senate Bills 559 and SJR 20 that would allow it to go forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman House and members of the committee. My name is Bruce Waltz. On a personal note, I'm one of eight members in my family that have attended the U of O over four generations, including a nephew who is currently a sophomore. So we have an investment. I've recently retired after 35 years serving the K-12 system in Oregon, the last 22 as an elementary principal in McMinnville. So I spent the majority of my career ensuring Oregon students were receiving a top-quality public education, and I've done my best to prepare them to continue in pursuit of a college degree as well. In my time, I've seen Oregon continue to cut funding for our public institutions, our colleges and universities, pushing a college degree out of the reach of many. I think I'm among the majority of Oregonians. I don't think this is acceptable, and I believe it's time for change, and I appreciate this committee's looking at that. You have before you a proposal that can begin to stabilize funding for Oregon's public universities. This will not only improve access for prospective students, but ensure that once a student begins their studies, they won't be priced out of their education either mid-year or mid-career. When we think about governance, being a school employee, I think of the school board superintendent relationship, and it seems incredible to me that we have institutions the size of, especially Oregon State and Portland State, that don't have that sort of relationship between their president and the governing body of that institution in terms of day-to-day operation with budgets, vision setting, and support for programs. I think that's one of the benefits of what we see before us, is that change. In terms of my own experience, I've got career vision, extended learning opportunities. I have 2 degrees from the university. And because of that relationship, I was able to bring programs from the university to my school district to help promote things for our students there. I know how much a difference a university education can make. It's been critical to the course of my own life. I've seen it change the lives of countless former students. Unfortunately, I also can recount many stories about students who wanted to attend college and were qualified, or who midstream in their college career could not complete because of the cost, or the change in cost. Data shows that this could be the first generation of Oregonians who will be less well-educated than their parents. I'm sure you're aware of that information. That's something to be worried about. I hope you take the opportunity before you to ensure we begin to transform higher education in Oregon and ensure that this generation of students has the same kind of opportunities my generation had and those before me. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you. We'll make sure everyone has an opportunity to speak here today as we run out of time. Keenan Ware, Sam Chapman, Manny Garcia. Thank you for coming. If you've got testimony, enter it into the record. Otherwise, don't feel the need to read it.
Hello. My name is Sam Chapman. I want to thank Chairman Haas and the rest of you for letting us speak today. I am a current junior at the University of Oregon, and I'm here to express my concern for Senate Bill 559. One of the things that has yet to be brought up in this hearing that I would like to bring to your attention is within Senate Bill 559, there's a proposed legislation to turn the U of O, a Department of Public Safety, into a potentially armed police force on campus. Over the past month, the Department of Public Safety has held multiple town meetings where they have declined to tell students whether the police force will be carrying guns or not. We are concerned about this because we see this as a problem with transparency. DPS has failed to be completely transparent on whether or not they're going to carry guns and whether they're going to carry those guns as a police force. As you have in front of you, there are 1,200 signatures and more to come of students who are concerned about this potential happening on campus. I have, as a junior at the University of Oregon, I have not witnessed or heard of one instance in which an armed police force would be needed on campus. A common argument in favor of guns on campus is, what if a shooting like Virginia Tech were to happen on campus? The bottom line is, we do not have any kind of power to stop people from bringing guns on campus if they want to. That's scary, but that is a reality. And there are a lot of us at the University of Oregon who are afraid that if guns are permitted on campus and we do have a full armed police force, that it could compromise our education in general. And in closing, I would just like to say that we will continue to come back and have an open communication with you guys about DPS turning into an armed police force, and I thank you.
Hello. Thanks all of you for being here today. My name is Manny Garcia. I'm an undergraduate at the University of Oregon, and I want to speak to you guys about the dangers of private money influencing our public universities. So in addition to locking up the state's ability to give bonds to higher education for 5 to 10 years, the massive $800 million bond under SB 559 will be matched with private funds, as you all know. And it's really ridiculous to think that private investors will give up enormous sums of money to match this without strings attached. We've already seen private corporations seek out universities who are really strapped for money. For example, at Emory University, they made a multi-million dollar contract with Coca-Cola, and it stated that no competing products, that's word of the contract, may be distributed at public events, so you'd expect you can't drink Pepsi. But they actually view products like tap water as competing products, and you're not allowed to distribute tap water at public events because of these financial contracts. The University of Kentucky in 1997 made a $25 million contract with Nike, and that contained what was called a non-disparagement clause, saying that Nike could terminate the contract at any time if the, quote, university disparages the Nike brand or takes any other action inconsistent with the endorsement of Nike products. And in 1998, a researcher at the University of Toronto found that the drug deferiprone, a drug being tested under a financial contract with the company Apotex, might have had life-threatening side effects. When the researcher tried to warn her patients about these side effects, the company Apotex pulled the plug on the study and threatened to sue if the information were published. Events like these are all too common among public universities that are strapped for cash. The requirement in the new partnership that the University of Oregon match the state's $800 million with these types of private deals will turn our university into nothing more than a tool for private corporations to increase their profits with little or no concern for the public welfare or our university. I urge strong opposition to this bill.
Hello. Thank you, Chair Haas and members of the committee. My testimony has been submitted. I won't repeat it, but I did want to touch briefly on the funding issue. Students have been researching this issue. My name is, for the record, my name is Keenan Weir. I'm a member of the Oregon Student Association and a student at Lane Community College. I would like to talk about the funding question. Students have been researching the proposal, and the average endowment is down 25% to 30%. So that would mean that if the legislature had approved this plan, SJR 20, in 2007, the U of O could have lost $250 million. I just wanted to put that out, and thank you.
Thanks to you.
Any questions? Chair Haas, I just wanted to say thank you for coming forward. I know it's not an easy thing to do to sit up in front of us to make this
you guys
testimony.
Did a good you guys job.
Really did a good job. Yeah.
Thank you. We're at the end of our tenancy here in this room, and I want to thank everybody for testifying. I think we will take another swing at this down the road. On Thursday, we will have Senate Bill 242 back before us, and I'm not sure what this means, but when I review the hearings that we've had in this committee since we started this year, we have spent more time on higher education than K through 12. And that's the first time I can remember that happening. So thank all of you. I'm going to close public hearings on Senate Bill 559 and Senate JR 20. We are adjourned.